From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up.
But this morning we come together as one nation blessed to live in freedom and grateful to worship in peace.
That was President Trump this morning at the National Prayer Breakfast. I was there. I'll have more when Tennessee Congressman Mark Green joins me. And residents of New York are finding out that there are consequences when their state's elected officials jump on the left's open border bandwagon. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf is here to explain. And in his remarks at the National Prayer Breakfast, the president touched on America's economic prosperity, saying we are lifting up citizens of every race, color, religion, and creed with more than 160 million Americans working. Tomorrow, the president continues the focus on economic growth with an Opportunity Now summit in Charlotte, North Carolina. Scott Turner, executive director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council, is here with details later on Washington Watch. Also, I was at the White House at noon today as the president discussed his acquittal. I'll have some thoughts on that when Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, joins me here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. This morning, I was in attendance at the National Prayer Breakfast as President Trump gave his speech addressing a host of issues, kind of covering the landscape of what's happening in the United States, focusing obviously on religious freedom, again, pulling some of his quotes from his Tuesday night State of the Union address, which was, in my view, one of the best speeches he's given. But he continued to beat some of those themes, or advance some of those themes again today, also talking, as I mentioned, about economic development, but pressing forward on international religious freedom. That was the theme of today's prayer breakfast. Joining me now to talk more about this, Dr. Mark Green. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee. And I'm going to also get his thoughts on the acquittal of the president that took place yesterday as well. Congressman Green, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony, for having me on the show. Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk first about, you know, the president really almost slap dab in the center of the president's State of the Union address was his discussion of religious freedom, his defense of religious freedom. Of course, I believe that all of our freedoms hinge on that first freedom, the freedom of religion.
Yeah.
The president hitting those themes again this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about the basis of our freedom, it is a fixed moral right and wrong. And for the vast majority of us, that is based in our faith. And so what makes democracy work, that fixed moral right, it is our faith. And so those of us like you and I who are Christian, we cling to that, and it's probably the for me and you and millions of Americans, it's the most important thing in our lives. And clearly the president has, more than any president in my lifetime, been an advocate and a warrior for religious freedom. And there are threats all across the country. I mean, he talked about it, you know, taking crosses down. You know, we're not doing that in this nation anymore. You know, military officers who can't pray in the name of Jesus at their change of command ceremonies. That stuff is done. And this president, you know, he's all for it. So I think that's awesome.
And he made that point in his comments. He said, you know, look, I'm fighting for these things. I'm doing these things. In fact, it was at the March for Life a couple of weeks ago where he made the comment. He said, they're fighting me because I'm fighting for you. I think the president sees the connection of pushing forward these core value issues, these foundational issues, that this is in part what is inciting the left against him.
Well, absolutely. You know, you can't, the far left can't say they're for a fixed moral right and wrong, because 20 years ago they argued that abortion should only happen in rare instances, and now they're talking about all the way up and during labor. So very clearly, their moral relativity is tied to nothing. What's next for those guys? Who knows? But faith bases our freedom in a fixed moral right and wrong. And our founding fathers said this is critical to democracy. You can't have freedom and democracy without a fixed moral right and wrong in faith. And so, it is tearing at the very foundation. The president recognizes it, and he is fighting for us and for our founding principles.
I want to play a clip from this morning's breakfast where the president was talking about how other nations are following America's lead and how we're, you know, even in our foreign policy, we're making this a top priority, and it's having a difference. Play clip number four.
Last year at the United Nations, I was honored to be the first president to host a meeting of religious freedom. It was based all on religious freedom. That was the first meeting of its kind ever held at the United Nations. There I called upon all nations to combat the terrible injustice of religious persecution. And people listened. And countries that we give billions of dollars to, they listened because they had to listen. It's amazing how that works, isn't it? But nobody ever played that game before.
I mean, the president is playing hardball, even with countries around the world saying, hey, religious freedom's a priority. You get a lot of money from us. We expect you to respect these fundamental human rights.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, the difference you kind of talked about, it's making a difference. The United Arab Emirates is hosting a prayer breakfast, its first prayer breakfast this year. That's the kind of change that's happening all across the globe because we got a leader here in America. You know, he mentioned this morning in his prayer breakfast about Iran and confronting a regime that doesn't allow religious freedom. The young woman who converted to Christianity and now is, you know, being tried by their court system. We got a president who stands up for religious freedom, and I'm proud of him for that and many other things.
The president today also at noon hosting a gathering there in the East Room. I was there as he talked about the acquittal that came in. That theme made its way a little bit into this morning's prayer breakfast. I mean, how can it not? You know, the president's gone through quite an ordeal, vindicated last night in the vote in the Senate. And then, of course, one thing he did when he walked in, he held up the newspapers with the headlines, Trump acquitted. He was certainly greeted with a lot of applause. I think he was enthusiastically received there at the prayer breakfast. But do you think the games are over, or do you think we're going to continue to see the partisanship that he was made reference to? It's tearing our country apart.
You know, I think some in the left are going to continue to push it. You know, you take somebody like Nadler or Schiff, they're going to continue to try to investigate him. These guys are not done. They hate him. I mean, this Trump derangement syndrome is evident. They're hurting the country for the sake of attacking this guy. And that's, you know, it basically points to their goal is power over the people. It's very obvious. So, yes, I think it continues. I think it's losing its power, though. It's losing its air, so to speak. If you saw his State of the Union, there was a poll, I think it was by CBS, 82% of independents were with him on the State of the Union address. 82% of independents. I mean, the Democrats want to continue down this pathway. It's just going to continue to hurt them. The president is a good man. I know him. And he's going to get there. But today was about just saying, hey, this has been an incredible ordeal in my family. And right now I'm processing it. I that's what I got from his speech this morning. And I think he gets there. He's a good guy. He's going to get there. But today he's letting everybody know this has been an ordeal for my entire family. It has tied up our government. And it was wrong. It blatantly wrong.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's what the president was doing. I think that's how he processes. He talks through these things. And as I was in the East Room today, that was kind of the sense I got. But I want to go. You brought up a term that's used often is the Trump derangement syndrome. What's behind that? What do you think it is that just incites these people to do things that are just, you know, that never been done before?
I've put a lot of thought into this. And the thing that I can come up with, the best answer I can give you, Tony, is that, you know, the last 20 to 30 years in America, the left screams really loud about some crazy thing. And Republicans go, oh, my goodness, we can't go there. So we better meet them halfway here. And then they go a little further to the left and they scream some crazy thing like universal rent control, which AOC just mentioned the other day. But this guy, he's done appeasing. I mean, he has put a stake in the ground and said, this is as far as left we're going. And I think they hate that because they've been able to move Republicans and get some appeasers to kind of meet them halfway. And Trump is like, we're done with that. And I think that's why they hate him so much.
You know what? I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you. I think that's what it is. I think he is unlike any other Republican before who's willing to just kind of give up the ground. What most Republicans, when they come in behind a liberal Democrat, will push the pause button on the bad policies, but they don't undo them. I was on Fox and Friends this morning. I said, well, I think the reason the left hates him so much is he's dismantling the infrastructure of the left that they've used to come after people of faith and they've used to promote big government.
Now, that's exactly right. And what he's also doing is guys like myself and others all across this country are getting in the political process who are with him, who are sick and tired of it. And we're putting, I mean, I'm right there with him. I'm putting the stake in the ground. We're not going any further to the left. And oh, by the way, we're coming back on some of these issues like religious freedom, like abortion. I mean, we keep going in the direction we're going with the millennials moving in our direction on abortion. We're going to overturn Roe v. Wade in this country.
Yeah, I see that happening, especially if we continue to see the change that's taking, the transformation, I should say, that's taking place in the courts. We're moving back to judges and justices that actually respect the Constitution and not rip it up.
Yeah, and you got guys on the president's team like Pompeo and Esper, and I think you're having Secretary Wolf or Acting Secretary Wolf on in a minute. These are leaders who are making a difference, who are, putting a stand. We're going to secure this southern border. 75% decreases in apprehensions. You know, Wolf has done a fantastic job over there. I mean, you got Esper. He's building the military back, leading over there at DOD. You got Mike Pompeo, who is also fighting this religious freedom overseas. Great leaders recruit great people to follow them. And that's another super positive thing from this president.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. Congressman Green, thanks so much for taking time to join us today. Always great to talk with you.
Always great to be with you, Tony. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much, Mark Green from Tennessee. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I would think the American people agree as well. When you look at the, in fact, the president made reference to a Gallup poll that was just out today, this morning. It said 90% of Americans say they're satisfied with their personal lives, the highest we've seen in a long time. People are actually satisfied. Economic growth, unemployment low, as I mentioned, about 160 million Americans working. And the president's personal approval rating is at an all-time high. I think Americans, especially our listeners, smart enough to see through the political games that are being played here and see that this is all about, it, as we were talking about, attacking the president because he's pushing back on the left. They think they're entitled to be able to control the country and force feed us with their liberal garbage. I mean, they're indoctrinating our kids. Just wait till we have that fight. And it's coming, folks. And we've got to make sure that we have people in place that will fight, and that will push back against the left. All right, speaking of that, when we come back, Acting Secretary of Department of Homeland Security Chad Wolf joins me to talk about actions he's forced to take because of New York's liberal laws. That's next.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as I said, busy, busy day. A lot happening today. But some things happening for residents of New York. They're finding out that there are consequences when their state elected officials jump on the left's open border bandwagon. New York lawmakers recently enacted a sanctuary green light law that allows illegal immigrants to obtain driver's license regardless of their immigration status. Now, the law also prohibits the New York Department of Motor Vehicles from sharing criminal records with federal agencies that are tasked with enforcing immigration laws. Now, the actions by New York prompted the Department of Homeland Security to suspend enrollment in Global Entry and Trusted Traveler programs because they can no longer confirm if an individual who applies for one of these programs actually meets the requirements. Now, this was triggered in part, the actions were taken after the president made a focal point of immigration and New York in his State of the Union address on Tuesday. Joining me now to talk more about this is Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf. Secretary, welcome to Washington Watch.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's talk about the green light law. You've taken these actions because the result of the New York law potentially could compromise the ability for you to determine who's coming and going in these special trusted traveler programs. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the law does a number of things, but specifically it restricts information sharing, or in this case, access to the DMV database, DMV records of Customs and Border Protection. And as you know, they administer a number of our trusted traveler programs, including Global Entry, which is probably the most popular one used in the air environment. And so as CBP law enforcement officials vet individuals' applications for that program, they have to ensure that that traveler is a low-risk traveler. That's the very nature of the trusted traveler program.
Right.
And they do that a number of different ways. And one way that they do that is they access the state, New York State DMV. And they're looking for specific things, such as, do you have a DUI conviction? Do you have another misdemeanor or felony traffic offense? Or do you have a sex offender arrest of some kind? And so there are things there that we need to make decisions on, we need access to. Without that access, the legitimacy of these trusted traveler programs are really at risk. And so New York State decided to take this action. Not only does it restrict information sharing with CBP, but also with ICE. But in this case, we're focused on CBP, and so we can't validate these individuals. And so unless we get access to this database, we cannot enroll or re-enroll new individuals into these programs. And that's what we informed them of yesterday.
Now, Secretary Wolf, I've read where officials from New York are pushing back, saying, "Oh, this is just this is vindictive. This is politics," because there are other states that have similar laws that the federal government's not taking action against. Are the other states do they have similar laws, or is it apples and oranges?
It is apples and oranges, and that's a statement by individuals who don't really know the law. And so the law in New York not only, restricts access for ICE, but also to CBP. It's the only state in the union that restricts access to CBP. Other states, as you indicated, Tony, certainly do that from an ICE perspective. But in this case, we're not talking about ICE. ICE does not run our trusted traveler programs. CBP does. We would not have taken this action had the two decades of information sharing cooperation continued and CBP would have not been included in the law that they passed, then we wouldn't be talking about this. But New York made a decision for whatever reason, whether it was political or elsewhere, to not grant access, law enforcement access to their records. And as a result, this is the consequence.
I mean, I don't know, maybe nobody else sees this, but the irony here for me is that you have New York doing this, taking this action. New York was one of the targets at 9/11, in which we had security breaches. The result of 9/11, one of the results, there were a number of actions taken, but one was to try to make sure we had more information sharing so that the intelligence community was communicating with one another and we knew who was here, where they were, and what they were doing. It seems like New York's moving in the wrong direction.
You're absolutely right. I mean, at this point in time, however many years after 9/11 that we are, we should be tearing down information silos and not trying to build them. And that's what's occurring here. So trying to restrict access, trying to restrict ICE access. So as they're building cases and tracking down transnational criminal organizations and other criminals to not have access to the DMV database to determine if an individual is associated with a certain vehicle, to look at their photo, to do certain basic law enforcement things, it's unconscionable. But even beyond that, when we talk about CBP, CBP has to enforce customs laws. They can't rely on, information in the DMV database. So as they try to verify whether a car that's being exported from the New York State is valid, has a valid title, as a valid, make sure that there's not a lien against that. They can't do that now because they don't have access to this information. So I'm not sure that New York really understood what they were doing when they passed this law. But as I indicate, actions have consequences. And if they're not going to change this, then unfortunately the department has to take steps. To mitigate the vulnerabilities, and that's what we're doing.
One final question for you, Secretary Wolf. Based now on the actions that the federal government has been forced to take, is New York rethinking this law so that they're not prohibiting the citizens of New York from participating in these travel programs?
Well, I sure hope so. I've had a number of calls this today from New York officials, and I think they're looking for a way to see if we can work through this. What I've told them is very simple: allow CBP access, and we can probably work this out. It's the way it's been in the past. It's the way it's been since 2005, and it's the way it was until late last year. So if we go back to that, we can turn this back on, because at the end of the day, CBP can adjudicate those applications in a safe and secure manner. So I'm willing to work with them. But to date, we haven't seen that cooperation.
All right. Secretary Chad Wolf, thanks so much for joining us. And there's a lot of us out there that appreciate the work that the Border Patrol, ICE, and others within the jurisdiction of Homeland Security do to keep us safe. So we're grateful. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right. Although I would say sometimes the TSA people get on my nerves when I travel, but it's another story. And I did actually share that with the secretary when I met with him. Okay, folks, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Still a lot more to come. So don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Let me encourage you to check out the website. Lots of resources there for you. Also, information about our upcoming trip to Israel. If you'd like to travel with me, General Boykin, Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman from Minnesota, we're going to be going in June, June the 2nd through the 12th, and you can join us and be a part of the trip. Not only do we go to all the historical biblical sites, but we meet with the political leaders, the religious leaders. So you kind of take in the geopolitical and overlay it with the historical. It's pretty fascinating. It's unlike any other trip. To find out more how you can join us, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, today at the prayer breakfast, President Trump touched on America's historic economy, saying we are building the world's most prosperous and inclusive society, pointing out that we have close to, maybe a little bit over, 160 million Americans working. Now, to continue this growth trend, the president's not resting on his laurels. He's out working. He will, in fact, tomorrow will host an Opportunity Now summit in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, the administration has been using Opportunity Zones to boost the economy in kind of what I would say forgotten communities across America. You might ask, what's an opportunity zone? Well, I got the right person to ask that question to. Joining me now is the Executive Director of the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council, Scott Turner. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch. Scott, are you there? I think we have him. I know he just landed, actually, in Charlotte. Let's see if we get him back on the line. Well, we'll get him here in just a moment. He's actually going ahead of the president. He's down in Charlotte, just got off the plane there in Charlotte to set things up for tomorrow. Scott, you with us?
Yes, sir. Mr. Perkins, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us. I know you just got off the plane there in Charlotte in anticipation or in preparation for tomorrow's summit there with the president. Yes, I want to start off with the question. What's an opportunity zone? Explain to our listeners what the president has been doing in using these opportunity zones to grow our economy.
Yes, sir. So opportunity zones came about with the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act legislation, the big tax overhaul that the president signed into law. And Tony, the question was being asked, you know, what can be done for those forgotten cities and forgotten communities and people who aren't experiencing the same type of prosperity that our nation as a whole is experiencing? And so when the Opportunity Zone legislation came about, it offers a capital gains tax incentive, which would drive money from the private sector to partner with public investment from the White House Opportunity and Revitalization Council, because we know it takes both private money and public investment to bring real revitalization and long-term sustainability, such as job creation and new operating businesses and new housing, not government subsidy housing, but like multifamily housing and mixed-use development, whereby the citizens inside of these communities that are being revitalized, these communities that we call Opportunity Zones, can fulfill build their God-given potential with new businesses and using their skill sets and moving into a new home and have an honorable, you know, job to take care of their families. And so it's part of the whole revitalization effort that you hear the president talking about. He talks about it in the State of the Union speech about how we want to lift up every American so that they can fulfill their potential and live the American dream. And so that's part of the whole revitalization theme and effort, and really the heart of the president and the administration, you know, is to go inside of these communities that haven't seen investment in decades, you know, and help people to build businesses and to build a new life. And we really have had a great response around the country, both from private investors, from community leaders, faith leaders, education leaders, and really working across the aisles, you know, both Democrat, Republican, Independent, what have you. Because, Tony, as you know, poverty doesn't really care what party you are. You know, poverty doesn't care what you look like or where you come from. You know, it affects all of us in our country, and so we want to bring real transformation. And so I'm really excited and humbled to be able to steward this effort for the president.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's part of the story of this administration that's not really being told is what the president is doing to revitalize these forgotten communities. And, right. And it's a success record. I mean, we're seeing it reflected in the numbers, lowest unemployment numbers for African Americans in history. So it's working. What's going to take place tomorrow at this summit? What's it look like?
So tomorrow is called the Opportunity Now Summit, and this will be a great conglomerate team effort of revitalization in various areas. So affordable housing, you know, because we have an affordable housing crisis in our country, and the opioid epidemic. How to attack that? You know, and to also in the Opportunity Zones, how do you bring, you know, community partners together that can work with our federal partners and private investors and nonprofits to utilize Opportunity Zones to for the betterment of the community? We'll have the HBCUs representatives that are there, and how we can utilize HBCUs in this whole effort of revitalization and bring a new opportunity. And so I'm very excited. We have a great team together, and many private sector and public sector people coming together from across really this region and the country to work together.
So, Scott, how can people find out more about what the Revitalization Council is doing?
I would go to opportunityzones.gov. That's our website, opportunityzones.gov. It's a one-stop portal to teach people about Opportunity Zones, the work of the council, and also, you know, to learn and how you can get involved.
All right, very good. Scott Turner, thanks so much for joining us, and I hope everything goes extremely well for you tomorrow.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Perkins. Thanks for having me.
All right, absolutely. All right, folks, don't go away. Travis Weber joins me next as we talk more about the president's prayer breakfast and his meeting at the White House at noon.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com.
All of us here today reaffirm these timeless truths. Faith keeps us free. Prayer makes us strong, and God alone is the author of life and the giver of grace.
That was President Donald Trump this morning speaking at the 68th Annual National Prayer Breakfast here in Washington. I was there along with, about 5,000 other people. You don't go for the food, let me assure you of that. But it was good. Lots of folks from across the country. I think we had 140 countries, including all, we had all of the United States there, but I mean, in terms of it was a global event, you got, I think, 140 countries represented there. Good opportunity to meet with religious leaders from around the world. But the president also continuing his theme on religious freedom and what this administration is doing. In fact, I want to play another clip of his speech where he kind of went through some of the issues that his administration has tackled. Bobby, let's play clip number three.
To protect faith communities, I have taken historic action to defend religious liberty, including the constitutional right to pray in public schools. We can also talk about the Johnson Amendment. We can talk about Mexico City policy. We've done a lot. But I also recently took executive action to stop taxpayer dollars from going to colleges and universities that spread the poison of anti-Semitism and bad things about Christianity.
Now, that was an amazing list of things he listed, because between each one of them, there was a standing ovation. And I can't recall seeing that at a national prayer breakfast, but he went on to talk about the life issue, standing ovation. So several standing ovations and extended applause when he was talking about those issues. Joining me now in studio to talk more about the president's remarks and really to kind of sum up the week, a lot going on in Washington this week, is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
The president, I have to say, he came in, this is the morning after the night that he was acquitted by the Senate. Nancy Pelosi said the prayer, it was categorized as a prayer before he spoke. And I mean, it was a It was a little awkward moment, but the president, I think, did a really good job staying focused, talking about religious freedom, talking about, you know, highlighting some of the things his administration has done. But the unique thing about this administration is that, and I've talked about this earlier in the week, he has a record. They're building a record of accomplishments when it comes to this religious freedom.
Tony, one of the things he mentioned at his prayer breakfast speech was the International Religious Freedom Alliance, which we've talked about, announced by the administration at the ministerial. And President Trump noted they have 25 countries in that campaign. That's a record. And that's one of a number of achievements as part of his international religious liberty record. I mean, we were talking with persecuted believers this week even here at an event, and they appreciate what President Trump has done on international religious freedom. So there's a lot of people who are taking notice of his good record on these issues.
Yeah, I was talking with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo yesterday, and they had a dinner with some of these international leaders, various prime ministers, foreign ministers that were here for the prayer breakfast that are a part of this alliance. And there's a lot of good things happening where you see these countries around the world. And I played a clip of a comment he made in his remarks this morning about our foreign aid. You know, we need to use that and use it as leverage to encourage people to recognize and respect this fundamental human right of religious freedom.
That's right. And at the one of the Religious Freedom Roundtables this week, one of the topics that came up was concrete steps like training diplomats, tying this to foreign aid, talking about what the UK is doing. But we know President Trump has a record on this. And we're talking about reasserting a bold American leadership for a fundamental human right, a right that we've had on the books since at least since post-World War II era in terms of concrete international law, but a right that's been neglected in a lot of international advocacy. President Trump is moving us in the direction of advocating for this right internationally while respecting the sovereignty of nations when it comes to internal matters and a proper international balance of power. But on this right, we need to take the lead because we've got people being oppressed around the world, China, Iran, one of the countries that he mentioned at the National Prayer Breakfast. People are being oppressed, and we need to speak up for them.
Yeah, and I think I was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about the prayer breakfast, and I think I may have made this point. I lose track of where I make these points. But what gives the administration credibility internationally on this issue of religious freedom is that they're protecting religious freedom here at home. And if they were not, if they were just giving lip service here at home, I don't think you would get the strong response that you get internationally. You know, because you look back during the Obama years, and they were hostile to religious freedom here at home, and that sent a message to the tyrants and to the terrorists that it was open season on people of faith, especially Christians.
Tony, I do think this affects the persecution of believers internationally for the better. It alleviates that persecution when they know that the president cares about this issue at home. We also know that they take notice of his words when he held that press conference with the Nigerian president several years ago and called out the killings of Christians in that country. That got a response.
A response, by the way. The media criticized him for specifically calling out Christians.
Well, and if you look at, you could type in Trump Prayer Breakfast 2020, the headlines that pop up were over one opening comment and the controversy between him and Pelosi, not the record of religious freedom that he documents in the rest of
the
speech.
Well, that's the U.S. press. I mean, that's why it's so important, folks, that you know where you're getting your information and that you, like Washington Watch. Now, we're not obviously the only news outlet because we're not really news from a standpoint of giving you, you know, all your morning read. What we do is we take three or four important issues of the day. We bring the newsmakers to you so you can hear directly from them and know what's going on. There are some very positive things happening in our country today because of this administration. Like we're just talking about the economic development, 160 million Americans working, unemployment, historic lows, talking about the accomplishments on life, religious liberty. When we've got, Travis, we've got a whole list of those things of what this administration has done. It's important that people equip themselves with those facts so that they can attack the fake news effect, because fake news is not telling that story.
It really requires the discerning listener and voter to to be careful at where they're getting their information from. Tony, just to go back to this point, you type in, you know, you Google a quick search of Trump and his remarks. That does not – the top results do not yield an accurate report of what was spoken about this morning. Where are the news stories on what President Trump did speak about, like Mary, a 21-year-old Christian convert in Iran, vulnerable woman who's disappeared. Regime's probably taken her. We don't know where. This woman, we haven't heard from. She could be dead. We don't know. President Trump called out Iran's treatment of her. This woman named Fatima Mohammadi. Where are the press reports on that? Where is the news reporting on a story of interest to people in a free society like that? It's not to be found. There are organizations, some reports, Christian Post has a story about her, Open Doors has a page for her. Where is the mainstream press when it comes to reporting on a vulnerable 21-year-old woman convert in a Muslim country? Think about all these factors that line up to make her a worthy cause to advocate for. President Trump's advocating for her. Where is the media and the supposed independent journalism?
Well, it seems, I'll ask you this question, but it seems to me that the media, if it's the Christian faith, it doesn't exist. And it's certainly not worth reporting on or drawing attention to. But if it's another faith, then it's appropriate to talk about it. It's as if Christianity just, if it's Christian, we don't need to talk about it.
That certainly makes it an inconvenient element of a story for a lot of reporters to talk about. But I think here there's somewhat more of an interest in generating controversy, manufacturing controversy, instead of reporting on facts. A woman is missing. We don't know where she is. People are advocating for her, yet they are not being helped. The press is not giving them a voice. President Trump went through other international religious freedom accomplishments, talked about the alliance, talked about Venezuela, his list of what he's done on international religious freedom, which there are a lot of advocates behind the scenes who love what he's doing and will, if you really ask them and get their true opinion, they support what he's doing when it comes to his policy achievements.
So, Travis Weber, what in the president's remarks this morning really stuck out to you that you said, wow, that was a great point. Glad he made that.
Yeah, I mean, Tony, I think for me the stories, the one I mentioned, is powerful because this woman, Fatima Mohammadi, known as Mary, has not been spoken about much. So it was great to see him mention her. I think in terms of larger themes, you could see some similarity between his State of the Union speech themes. It was really great to see him point us back to God, point us back to the fact that we're a people who rely on God, rely on prayer. Just going through his list of priorities, these caught my eye in obviously a religious audience. Him giving these remarks to, he's laying out why people who care about religious freedom have a good reason to support what he's doing. All of that caught my attention in terms of his remarks this morning.
Well, you want me to tell you what I thought was fascinating?
I'd love to hear.
Well, I'm glad you asked me, but I wanted to, in part, what I'm going to say is going to make the left crazy. So all you left-wing bloggers that are in the basement of your mom's house, I want you to get ready, because I'm going to tell you something that's probably going to scare you to death. Because what I saw was actually the first standing ovation of the morning. What drew people to their feet, all right, was when he said, I've taken historic action to defend religious liberty, including the constitutional right to pray in public schools, and people jumped to their feet and with a extended applause. Now, why is that going to shake the left? Because this president sees that that's important to Christians, to people of faith, because it's restoring something that's been taken from people of faith and from our kids. And it's been pushed out of the public square. And I would say we're going to see this administration focus more on education and the anti-faith, the anti-Christian bullies that are intimidating school officials, intimidating children, and keeping them from being able to exercise their First Amendment, which, by the way, is so important, because as we fight these culture wars, you know, trying to preserve the foundation of morality, which is the basis for our country, they're taking our kids away captive by indoctrinating in our public schools. And the best defense against that is a vibrant faith.
Tony, the attack on God in public schools, in the public square, I mean, it goes back decades.
It goes back to 1962 and 63 when prayer and Bible were taken out of the school.
And that marked a assault, the beginning of an assault, at least in its modern kind of form, against manifestations of religion in public schools, using different theories, but all attacking the presence of religious expression and pushing God to the margins.
Began to marginalize and stigmatize faith to where now, you know, what we just, we had the sophomore from Kentucky on last week, for high school sophomore, talking about the prayer lockers and how, you know, even having a prayer locker now is a target for the anti-Christian groups.
Right. But you think about this. The this attack is against the religious freedom of people in a number of respects, including the issue of school choice. I mean, President Trump mentioned this in the State of the Union. He had a mom and her daughter there who benefited from school choice. Oftentimes through religious schools this occurs. People want to sideline and marginalize these religious schools. It's another form of the attack on God in the public square. They're going after these schools. Yet, how can you face a mom and her daughter, increasingly more and more parents standing up and saying, I just want the best education for my child? And often religious institutions provide that. Religious institutions provide the social benefits. We heard an economic opportunity zone story. These institutions are bolstering society for, right, for the well-being of all, for the common good.
Yeah, everybody benefits from it.
And people, you're right, need to see that.
Emily Cheney was the girl's name there in Kentucky. Here's another statement the president made. I'm probably going to be out of time here. But he said, religion in this country and religion all over the world, certain religions in particular, are under siege. We won't let that happen. We're going to protect our religions. We're going to protect Christianity. We're going to protect our great ministers and pastors and rabbis and all the people that we so cherish and that we so respect. The president is not going to let this go, and this is a historic opportunity to restore the foundations of this country, which rest upon our faith.
And for America to be a beacon of freedom to the world.
Yeah, this is the opportunity. We have a president for the first time willing to fight for these things, but we've got to fight for him and for those that he has put in office and not believe everything we hear from the left. The media, folks, newsflash, can't you see it? It's rolling under the bottom of your radio there. Newsflash, the media is not our friend. The media is not feeding us the information that will help us make right decisions. They're feeding us information that will help us make the decisions they want you to make. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us as well. Tune in to Shannon Bream tonight on Fox. I'll be on with her this evening, talk about the prayer breakfast as well. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.